Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
You're with ABC Radio National, and welcome to Street Stories. The Indian city of Bombay was originally a group of seven islands and was the great jewel in the dowry of the 17th century Portuguese princess, Catherine of Braganza, on her marriage to Charles II of England. But this rapidly expanding city was recently dubbed a great ruined metropolis by the writer Salman Rushdie. Leslie Branigan takes us to Bombay, also known as Mumbai, which is predicted to become the world's most populous city in the next decade. 60% of the population lives in slums due to an overly stressed property market and bizarre rental provisions left over from the Second World War.
Bombay is the biggest, fastest, richest city in India. With 15 million people jostling for space, the very rich rub shoulders with the extremely poor. The city's oceanfront buildings are amongst the most expensive real estate in the world. And interspersed amongst these are the many slums that house the millions of poor people flooding in from the provinces. For the last 60 years, an extraordinary rental market has exacerbated the squeeze for precious space in the city, even in the luxury areas of wealthy South Bombay.
Well, in the building that I grew up in, there were a series of underground garages. Places where you parked your cars, and then by and by, you know, if the driver was tired, he could take a nap there. Well, a number of the residents started letting their drivers live there. Then the drivers brought in their families from the village, and they lived in this dank underground hole. I mean, they were horrible places. Well, pretty soon, the people pushed out the cars. And now all these underground garages in this complex of buildings are completely empty of cars and completely filled with drivers and their families and small enterprises such as ironing services for the people who live in the flats above. It's a village. It's a complete village.
Sukheta Mehta is the author of the Pulitzer Prize-nominated Maximum City, Bombay Lost and Found, an autobiographical account of his experiences of living in the city. He says the greatest fear of a Bombayite is to end up on the footpath, so the living conditions of a garage are infinitely preferable to this possible fate.
They're not very nice places to live. It's actually pretty Dante-esque. But they've got very little ventilation, and the last time I went there, the monsoons had knocked a hole in the top of these garages, so the whole place was flooded and children were living in this kind of stagnant water. But it is under the most desirable real estate in Bombay, and it's a perfect metaphor for Bombay, because above the ground are these incredibly luxurious flats, each one costing millions of dollars, and below the ground are these underground garages which have been occupied illegally and are home to an entire slum colony.
In this city of extremes, where the poor and the rich live side by side in starkly different conditions, many of the city's long-established middle class get cheap rental accommodation thanks to a long-standing legal provision. Aspi and his mother live in a pleasant apartment in the South Bombay suburb of Dadra.
This apartment belonged to my mummy's uncle. He had rented the apartment about 55 years ago. It's one of the old ancient colonial buildings. We've got two rooms and a kitchen, a total area of around 650 square feet. We were paying a rent of around 370, and now it has gone to 480 per month.
So basically it's a pittance.
Absolutely, peanuts. Absolutely.
Aspi and his mother pay less than 20 Australian dollars in monthly rent, because they inherited the tenancy of their uncle's rent-protected flat. But many Bombay landlords are unhappy about this legal provision that's imposed on them, and like Aspie's landlord, often resort to unscrupulous methods to get tenants out of their flats.
12 years ago, he filed a suit against my mother when I was busy on a contract mission at Dubai. Unfortunately, she was all alone, so I had to pack up my bags and leave my job, leave my contract and migrate to Bombay once again to assist my mother and give her moral support to fight the case. The suit was filed on frivolous terms that there was nobody residing in the flat for the last 12 years. Although there was not a single day which we kept the flat locked, we contested the case. The case lasted for around 7.5 years, after which the judgment came in our favor.
So why do you think the landlord took out this case against you?
He had a false pretext that he had a large family. He mentioned that he was not able to accommodate all of them into his flat. Despite the fact that having two flats at his disposal, he deliberately filed the case against my mother, who is the legal and rightful tenant of that flat.
So if he had got rid of you and he got new tenants in, how much money could he get for renting your apartment?
Firstly, he could have got a skyrocket sum of at least rupees 45 lakhs.
So that's black money before...
Absolutely rotating black money in Bombay.
That's 130,000 Australian dollars as an under-the-table deposit, followed by ongoing rent of 5 times the current amount. The law-abiding landlords believe they're getting a bum deal because they're missing out on these market rates. Near the busy railway station in Dadra, Sandeep Chavan lives on the top floor of an apartment block he inherited.
I'll leave my shoes here.
Yeah. Sure. My grandfather, he was working with the Britishers in the East India regime. So he made his fortune due to his knowledge of English, basically. And he took loan at that time, and that was only 5,000 rupees in 1933. So basically he made this so that the rental income or anything will benefit the future pedigree. Yeah, my home is like an average old-style heritage building, because the British type construction is the bricks and the quality of iron and all was very good, you know. We have got 4 residential tenants, plus we have got shop line that is of 7 people. But what has happened, that it is a white elephant. It is not possible to earn from the rental income. Rents are protected, yes.
So and how much do your tenants pay to live here?
It is just peanuts. It is below any average city. Maintaining is very expensive. Regular repairs is the plumbing, drainage, maintenance of the building, whitewash. It's like a white elephant.
Bye. Okay, bye.
Rent-protected apartments are scattered through the old buildings in wealthy South Bombay. My hotel is an old colonial building in Calaba, near the ocean front. Each night as I take the rickety old lift up to my room, I pass a residential apartment on the second floor with a nameplate for a Parsi couple, a Mr. and Mrs. contractor. The hotel proprietor tells me that when he bought the building, the rent-protected tenants on the second floor came with it. Their apartment takes up the whole floor, the equivalent of 25 hotel rooms, and the residents pay a pittance to live in this prime position 1 block from the ocean. Suketa Mehta says rent protection was implemented more than 60 years ago.
The rents in Bombay are frozen according to 1944 levels. This was a period of the Second World War, and there was wild speculation in property prices in Bombay. So the British government decided to impose emergency, temporary rent control. It froze the price of rental units. Well, this created a group of people who had a vested interest in keeping the emergency measure permanent. And so much for that, the legislation was amended so that the rights went on to the heirs of the tenants. So much of the prime real estate in Bombay, it is occupied by people who are paying 1944 rents and their children and their children's children, who essentially expropriated the property from their rightful owners. You know, there's this old saying, everyone loves a farmer, no one loves a landlord. Well, in Bombay, when I looked at the real facts behind the Rent Act, I started loving the landlord.
In a back street in Calava is a fading, grand, four-storey colonial building with beautiful iron balustrades wrapping around a wide wooden staircase that leads up to the roof. In an expansive rooftop apartment crammed full of junk lives the widowed Parsi landlady, Prochi Nagpurwala. While many apartment blocks in Bombay are dominated by residents from the state of Gujarat and Hindu vegetarian rules, Prochi's block is what real estate brokers dub cosmopolitan, containing residents from all religions and regions.
There are certain tenants who are Parsi, there are certain Christians and certain Muslims and Hindus. And they all stay, they pay me monthly rent. All have been staying here for last 30 or 40 years.
30 or 40 years?
Yes, except a doctor. Monthly rent is very low. It is, some are paying 200. Rent Act protects them. What the Rent Act says, we have to take it accordingly.
So what would be the market rate, really, for these apartments?
If they go outside in a new building, it will cost them a lot. But as they are in a very old building, the rent is very low.
One of Prochi's commercial tenants is a doctor who's caused a lot of problems with his activities.
20 years back he had come. He never paid me the rent. He never paid for 20 years. We went on asking, he wouldn't pay. He's just like browbeating us. And he started building up inside his premises and made into all rooms and partitions. He's keeping patients and earning on them. And he has got operation theatres and many doctors there. And so the court, we are running into litigation for last 20 years.
And what happens each time you go to court?
Each time we go to the court and we get a date and come back. But when it will start, then it will come to an end. Still, we are waiting for that time to come.
So what do you think then about the effectiveness of the Rent Act?
It's very poor. It's not supporting the landlord at all. It's only supporting the tenants.
You're listening to Street Stories on Radio National. I'm Leslie Branigan, exploring the convoluted housing situation in Bombay, also known as Mumbai. For those people without access to a rent-protected apartment, it's very expensive to rent in the city. When Suketu Mehta moved back to Bombay, he thought it would be easy for him as an American citizen to find somewhere to rent.
If I came from New York with my little family looking for a flat at a price I could afford, and first of all, I found that it was incredibly difficult even to rent a flat at all because I wasn't working for a company. Normally what happens is if you come from abroad, your company will pay a rental deposit which is equivalent to one-third of the price of the flat, so that if you stay on past the stipulated period, the landlord can legally keep the one-third of the price of the flat. Well, I didn't have that kind of money, and so I had to go out looking for flats on my own. And if you look at the property columns in the Bombay newspapers, I mean, you'll get a good laugh. And many of them will say, foreigners only. So I remember applying for one of these flats that said foreigners only, and the broker explained over the phone to the owner of the flat, yes, he is a foreigner. He has an American passport. His wife has a British passport. And then he turned to me and said, but they want 100% white-skinned foreigner. So I wasn't foreign enough. The belief was that someone who was 100% white-skinned would not stay on in his flat. And I, being Indian, part of the great thieving horde of Indians, would stay on and take over, squat on his property.
With the Indian population now over 1 billion, people grab whatever space they can, squatting and encroaching on apartment landings, vacant lots, and in empty sheds. Bombay is full of stories of tenants that can't be moved, and the most outrageous stories are of owners coming back to find their live-in servants or house guests have changed the locks and have filed a suit to take possession of their apartment. Leading off the densely knit lanes near the Bombay courts are the chambers of Pradeep Gandhi, a High Court advocate who specialises in property law.
A servant can file a suit or a friend can file only on one ground, for adverse possession. Nowadays, landlords have become too smart. The moment a servant stays for more than 20 years, the landlord has to throw him out by following the process of law, by filing a suit for eviction or trespass. If we file a suit in the Honorable High Court, it will take around 20 years.
So is this why sometimes people who have servants send them away once every few years to live somewhere else so they can't make a claim on the house?
Yes, yes. They do that very, very often.
Although servants rarely win cases of adverse possession, they can still legally live in the apartment while the case drags on, which is usually for years. Some apartment blocks collectively rent a simple dwelling nearby and rotate their servants through it periodically to prevent them from making claims on their usual residence. Above all, no one wants to get caught up in the chaotic court system, like Prochi Nagpurwala has with her 20-year case against her tenant doctor.
When you go early morning at 11 o'clock, the court is overcrowded with these only problems. Everybody comes out with the same problems only. My tenant is doing this, my tenant is doing that. There is nothing new.
Why do you think it takes so long?
Because the judges are less and the people are more. All the tenants' applications are so much that the court cannot approach it. And they go on lingering and lingering and lingering.
Every year, the courts and the government make efforts to change the legislation, but the attempts are stymied due to the obstructions of various lobby groups and the overly loaded court system.
There is a very big matter being fought in the Honorable Supreme Court. Our Supreme Court has to deal with such a case sitting with 11 judges. And the most unfortunate part is to gather 11 judges. This has happened from the past 5 years. The 11-judge bench has been able to sit only thrice, and they would be able to hear only for maximum number of 2 or 3 days. And the matter is so heavily contested that there are more than 50 to 100 top legal luminaries coming and arguing, and one legal luminary takes a day. So unfortunately, it is not being heard, because if it is heard, there would be a beautiful judgment coming from the Honorable Supreme Court. That has not been done.
Tussles between the lobby groups over the Rent Act take on the dimensions of a war, with key players sometimes under armed guard. It's said the rent mess will never be solved because it would put the professional activists out of business. In the meantime, landlords have developed methods to get rid of their rent-protected tenants. The key money system, where a tenant is bribed by the owner to vacate a rent-controlled flat, became so prevalent, the state was forced to legalise it. But landlords sometimes resort to blackmail, mafia-style protection rackets, or snatching apartments back from tenants. And the effects of the Rent Act flow into all corners of the city and stratas of society.
The struggle for the Rent Act, as it's known, is often cast as a struggle of the poor tenants against the rich landlord. Well, it's actually much more complex than that. It keeps out the poorest of the poor who come into Bombay and find out that there is essentially no rental housing market, because people who have property are afraid of renting it out. And what it does is it freezes out the newcomer, the poor. So newlyweds stay with the husband's parents indefinitely because they can't afford to get a flat of their own. At some point, the city just will run out of room. I mean, it is choking on its own population. It is a city which is experiencing a boom and a civic emergency at the same time. 60% of the population of Bombay live in slums. So, by definition, the entire city is a slum when the majority of the people live in slums.
The slums of Bombay are estimated to hold between 7 to 12 million people, many of whom have flooded in from rural areas looking for a better life than agriculture. Shashi is a typical domestic worker, living in a crowded slum just minutes away from the luxury high-rise where she works. In her tiny one-room dwelling, smaller than the average Australian bathroom, she describes her rent situation.
I have three landlords, but I don't have a good relationship with them. I have to pay 1,500 rupees for this little room. Despite the fact that I'm giving such an exorbitant sum of money, they constantly try to extort money from me, to such an extent that occasionally my daughter has to go and fight with them, saying, "We barely have money for our own existence, and yet you keep coming and harassing us."
Shashi pays about $60 per month in rent, about four times as much as Aspie, whose rent-protected apartment is 10 times the size of Shashi's tiny room. PK Das runs the NGO Navara Huck, which fights for the rights of Bombay's slum dwellers.
It's simply a failure to plan for the city. That's what has led to the proliferation of slums here. It is a myth that there is no land. You have 7.5 million people living in the slums, who constitute 60% population, occupying a mere 8% of the landmass of the city. There is not enough land earmarked for housing of the urban poor. This really is the root cause of the illegality about slums.
And slum dwellers rarely have straightforward access to amenities such as water and electricity.
I have
to pay extra for electricity, and there's no toilet in my room. So I have to go a very long way and pay for one. I don't have water at all in this house. There's a municipal tap just outside, but I'm not allowed to use that water. I have to walk a long way to buy water. There's a premium to the water cost, and those who pay more have direct and immediate access to the water. I pay less, therefore I have to wait in the queue to fill my water pots. I have to pay 300 rupees a month in order to get 2 to 3 pots of water per day.
And why can you not have access to the tap outside your own house?
I have to go by the rules of the local landlord committee, who own these slums. And it's their order that I don't use this tap.
Shashi doesn't know if her landlords actually own her house or if they can legally control access to the slum amenities. Many standover men bribe or blackmail the property owners or relevant officials to turn a blind eye to their extortion. PK Das says these strong-arm tactics and corruption are common to all the slums in the city.
Well, you have to understand that the power structure that operates in Mumbai city, the slum lord, the elected representatives, the lower officials of the government and the police, they all have a nexus to extract money, to extract benefits, to get them to sign documents. So the slum dwellers in effect actually are paying rent everywhere. The slum dwellers that live free is a lie, is a bluff. They do not. They actually spend much more for everything than middle class pay or an upper classes pay. But one thing we must understand about Mumbai The root cause of all this is really the high influence of the real estate agenda in the city. This city historically has been and is ruled by the ideology and interest of the developers and builders. We are building mega structures and malls, multiplexes, cinema halls. So people are enamored that we have fancy buildings coming up with new technology, but we are doing it at the cost of social infrastructure. This entire boom has actually been counterproductive.
Times of India published a study which demonstrated that there are 400,000 empty residences in Bombay, which are kept empty because if you rent out a flat, there's no guarantee that you will regain possession of it. There's a boom in property in Bombay. It's a speculative housing, so lots of Indians who live overseas buy flats and then just keep them empty. They're just hoping to make money off it in the years to come. This in a city where 60% of the people don't have proper housing. They live in slums.
When owners of new apartments do rent them out, they're now taking advantage of new laws to protect themselves from the risk of tenants squatting.
Under the Rent Act, the moment you say it's 12 months, it amounts to tenancy. Leave and license is only a permission for occupation.
Do you think the legal system has been effective at resolving these issues?
You want me to tell the truth?
Yes.
Up to the year 1995, the legal system was very ineffective. There have been a lot of changes from 95 to 2005 for better and effectual and faster results. After around 15 years, we may reach a very good stage where a person will say, better late than never.
Had we not been under the umbrella of the Rent Act, we would have been flat by now, very honestly. We had no option but to move on the streets or beg with our neighbors to request them to help us to move in at least for a limited period of time until we found suitable accommodation.
It is difficult, but we are managing somehow. Yeah, it is a thrilling story, what my grandfather said, my son should say to their grandchildren. We are traditional owners. Keep up the heritage and maintain it.
Every time I go back to Bombay, I notice its beauty and its horror. You will never stop people from coming into Bombay. And in a crowded place where life is hard, people tend to band together. And what I started realizing was the incredible humanity, the incredible generosity of Bombayites. They invited me along to the marriages, the births of their children. And this was rich and poor and middle class, every sector of Bombay society. And I found that I could go home again through the stories that they shared with me.
The stark contrasts of Bombay are said to be a metaphor for all of India, a concentrated spectacle of deprivation and privilege, exploitation and humanity. In an attempt to describe why people continue to come here, a slum dweller describes Bombay as a bird of gold, where even the slums of the maximum city are preferred to the rural village, as they hold the possibility of dreams coming true.
You've been listening to Street Stories on ABC Radio National with Leslie Brannigan. Technical production was by Judy Rapley and John Jacobs. Thanks to Khurshid Wadia for translation in Bombay, to Mudita Diaz for the readings, and to Nicole Steinke.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.